Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the press call on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise, and after the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Thank you. I will now turn the conference over to Ms. Minnie Stackelberg. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Great. Thank you. My name is Winnie Stackelberg, and I'm the Senior Vice President of External Affairs here at the Center for American Progress. I want to thank you all for joining the call. We are going to have a brief presentation by Stan Greenberg, Rui Teixeira, and Brenda McGarry, and then we will turn it over to questions. Let me just say a couple of words at the outset. I think we're at a historic and unique time in the debate around Don't Ask, Don't Tell. 17 years or so after the policy was implemented, there has sort of never been a better opportunity, have never been in a better moment to actually repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I think you'll hear from pollsters about the changes and the trends, but you don't have to look any farther than the recent hearings on Capitol Hill, President Obama's State of the Union, and other military observers, former Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Colin Powell, Shali Kashvili, and current Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mullen, who have all spoken out about repeal. I think it's safe to say that it is no longer if the policy will be repealed, but how and when. We want to spend a little time talking about the trends in terms of the military and likely voters in support of repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and then the political context. I'm going to turn it over to Stan Greenberg, who's the chief pollster for President Bill Clinton when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was implemented, to talk about survey results that he has done recently. Stan?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, the CAP, and for the support of this project. This has been a very serious effort, both the research effort and the broad look at the policy options on this issue. We've been involved over the last few months, including releasing a Democracy Corps poll last year on to help track the just overall support or opposition on the issue. I mean, I should mention my entry into this is indeed the Clinton White House, which dealt with that issue very early on in the administration. It somewhat surprised us at the time in terms of how it came on and took over. It was, to be truthful, the issue then was, I mean, the support levels for gays and lesbians being able to serve in the military was, you know, about in the low 40s, but people were very concerned about proceeding with that and its effects on the military. It was, we tracked news coverage during the period of the White House, and that issue was a very big part of the recall of the early part of the Clinton presidency, and we did polling after the 94 election. It was still a factor in that election. The world has changed radically on this issue, in general, impacting this, but very specifically on the gays and lesbians being able to serve in the military. This poll, which we conducted in mid January, and I think there'll be links for sharing specific parts of the poll, and people will speak to that later in the call. But the most important findings here is the stable level of support. We have 54% support repeal, with 35% opposed to it. This is nearly a 20-point issue in this closely divided partisan environment. This is actually a unique issue, and it's quite amazing, frankly, that this issue would take on that character. We asked this question in a fairly conservative form. You know, it says federal law currently prohibits openly gay men and women from serving in the military. Do you think this law should be repealed or not? So we have quite conservative wording. There are other polls out there which actually have higher levels of support for repeal or for gays and lesbians serving in the military. That 54% number will be consistent with Quinnipiac, who used the same wording, consistent with our numbers last year. But if you look at the time series in military times, or if you look at the CBS CBS or Gallup polls, you see very dramatic shifts on this issue. In February of of 93, there was 42% support for in favor of homosexuals, their wording, serving in the military. That's now 59%. Very dramatic change. I didn't release any White House numbers because I could not, do that. But the numbers, clearly they would show a similar dramatic double-digit change in support for this. What is probably the most unique thing about this, first of all, that this is not a polarizing issue. This is a polarizing time in Washington. I'm not sure about the country, but it certainly is in Washington. But not on this issue. This is an issue in which two-thirds of Democrats support it, 55% of independents, but 41% of Republicans, just 41 to 46, almost evenly evenly split. We also find in the congressional battleground that it reflects the country as a whole. So 56% in the competitive House seats favor a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And 56% in the in the Senate battleground. So I don't know of another issue right now, which you would have thought would have been polarizing given its history. But I think people have moved to a different place on tolerance. They've moved to a different place on the role of the military, and I think also their own experience and watching how this issue has played out. I want to see this policy reversed. It's very surprising some of the groups that are are supportive of change. Catholic vote, 64% of Catholics support repealing the policy. Almost 60% of whites between 50 and 64 years of age, so older white voters are very supportive of change. White married women, who are some of the more socially conservative, 61% favor repeal. And probably paralleling the, I said probably the most amazing thing here was this is not a polarizing issue given its history. The other part of this is the context. We're in the middle of fighting wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. People are very conscious of the demands that make on the military and the role the military has played. People have an extraordinary view of the U.S. military and its heroic role and the people who serve. But we ask a question, which you would believe might lead people to want to hold back. We gave people a choice. We're in the middle of two wars and need every talented man and woman we can get, regardless of sexual orientation. Or we're in the middle of two wars and this is no time to make such a dramatic change as allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly in the military. By 2-1, 60 to 31%. And the intensity on this is on the side of, let them serve. 46% agree strongly with the argument for because we're in two wars, they should serve. Only 24%. Again, it's almost 2-1 on intensity in favor that the current military context favors moving right away rather than waiting and putting off this decision. In fact, we actually find that people are still more likely to support this change, even if they hear that the military is opposed to this change. This was asked prior to the testimony in which high officials in the military indicated its support for this change, which could produce further shifts. But even before that happened, we asked the question that, if the military is opposed to changing the policy, whether this would, make it more or less likely to support the policy. It's actually, slightly more likely to continue supporting it. So there's but more importantly, 63% say no difference. So people believe this is a decision that's to move ahead because of the wars we're in, and they think they should move, particularly now with the leadership in the military saying move. But even so, people want to move ahead. Probably most important, given the experience of this issue, we watched what happened in 93 and in 94 on this issue and the possible fallout in the election. We asked in this survey, we asked, regardless of how you feel about this issue, if your representative in the U.S. Congress voted to end the ban on gays and lesbians serving openly in the military, would you be more likely to vote for him or her, or would it make no difference? We find an even break, 24-27, 24 more likely, 27 less likely, with half saying no difference, so that there is, and that holds up in the congressional battleground and the Senate battleground, so that we are talking about an issue in which those, you know, political effects are, you know, neutralized. So I don't get many issues on which to speak about that kind of historic change in mood and climate. It's particularly it's interesting to me that the Washington polarization is less important, I think, for citizens of the country and voters than the demands on the military that have happened post 9/11 and the what's happened in Afghanistan and Iraq. People come away from that totality of experience wanting to see gays and lesbians. They want to see this ban repealed, if for gays and lesbians to be able to serve openly in the military, and want to move quickly because of what they've observed over the past years. Okay, thank you. Let me pass it to Rui.
Yeah, let me just briefly underscore a few things that Stan said based on the publicly available polling or the other publicly available polling besides our poll. The Washington Post recently asked about this issue. They asked, do you think homosexuals who do publicly disclose their sexual orientation should be allowed to serve in the military or not? And that was a 50-point issue, 75-24, they should be allowed. Back in May of 1993, it was a minus 11 issue. By 55-44, people thought homosexuals shouldn't be allowed to serve openly. In the military, Stan mentioned the Quinnipiac poll, which has very similar wording, 57-36. We should repeal the prohibition against openly gay men and women serving in the military. Quinnipiac also found that people agreed, 66-31, that it's discrimination not to allow them to do that. By 65-30, they said that they disagreed that allowing openly gay men and women to serve in the military would be divisive for the troops and hurt their ability to fight. And finally, by 82-10, they said we should end the practice of disciplining people who disclose their sexual orientation. And finally, just to make sure we're not cherry-picking the polls here, Fox News actually asked about this, too. They asked, do you favor or oppose allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly in the military? That was in early February of this year. 61-30, they favored allowing gays and lesbians to serve openly. So I think it's kind of an open and shut case in the court of public opinion based on our and other data. It's also worth underscoring that things aren't going to change on this front, I don't think, especially when you think about the way the demographics of the country are shifting, most particularly the rise of the millennial generation, who are so much more liberal on issues concerning gays, as people probably know, as opposed to the population as a whole. This group actually supports legalizing gay marriage. And if you look at their opinion on this particular issue, allowing gay men and women to serve openly in the military, of course, it's heavily on the side of allowing them to serve. It's about a 20-point issue, as Stan was mentioning. For the public as a whole, it's more like a 35-point issue for members of the millennial generation. So I think all this points in the same direction and, of course, is very consistent with the results of our poll. So I'll turn it over to Brendan, I guess, for the report in the Military Times work.
Sure thing. Hi, this is Brendan McGarry. Again, I'm the database reporter for Military Times. The company has actually Army Times Publishing. We put out the service weeklies, Army Times, Air Force Times, Marine Corps Times, and Navy Times. We do tracking polls each year, and we actually did a special survey this past fall on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which is the clearest indication we've seen to date that attitudes are changing among career-oriented service members. And I say career-oriented deliberately. It's worth noting that the types of a service member who subscribes or reads the Military Times newspapers is different in important ways than the military overall. For example, they're older, they are more experienced, and they are far more likely to be putting in the 20 years. So this really is a snapshot of the professional core, the career core. And I think that's all the more worth noting because of the trend we're seeing. Even among this group, which is traditionally more conservative than the military overall, we're seeing a significant change in attitudes on this topic. And that's basically the thrust of our recent report on this piece. And you can find it at militarytimes.com. Right now it's still up there. And beyond just being a shameless promotion, it's there's also a lot of great data in there. There's the methodology statement. There's sidebars. There's a lot of stuff that – there's graphics. There's things that you may find that we may not cover in this. So that's why – another reason why I wanted to mention that. There's also the raw data for anybody who's actually interested in analyzing what we saw. Basically, again, the trend is that opposition is down among these folks. In 2004, we saw nearly two-thirds of our active duty respondents say that they were opposed to allowing gays to serve openly. In our in the poll that we did, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell poll, again, conducted in the fall before Mullen's testimony, we see that number at a bare majority. We see it at 51%. And it's actually worth noting, I've got a little teaser here, since this time, we've conducted our annual poll, our annual tracking poll, and we're seeing a continuation of this trend. And I don't want to give away the numbers there because it's most likely going to be a piece of that forthcoming package. But anyway, two big takeaways here. There are some limitations to the data. I mentioned that initially. This should not be read strictly as the military overall. Our respondents are a little bit different, and there was some concern mentioned by a couple advocacy groups about the methodology. I'm happy to go into that at a later point if you want. We are. I do have. I feel very confident in our results. We've reached out to American University Statistic Consulting Center. We've got we had Laura Miller at Rand Corp, who studied this issue for a number of years, review the survey questionnaire. So we're very comfortable and confident in our findings. But there are some inherent limitations to the data, which I do want to acknowledge, and I'm happy to sort of speak more in detail about. Again, two main takeaways: attitudes are changing among the career-oriented service members. And number two is we actually incorporated a question on sexual orientation in the survey. Now, obviously, this is something that the Defense Department cannot ask under the regulatory statute of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law. They took that question off induction forms. So this is the first time we've ever asked it, and we found some very surprising results there. Slightly more than 2% of active duty respondents identified themselves as gay or bisexual. Another 3% said they declined to answer or were unsure. Women were three times more likely than men to report being gay or bisexual, 5.4% to 1.7%. And these numbers track with what we've seen in some civilian studies. The demographer Gary Gates at the Williams Institute recently put out some numbers, and they are similar to what we've seen, not only the overall percentage, but also that disparity between men and gender. So that's pretty much what I wanted to mention up the top. I'm happy to take any questions. I'd encourage you to go to militarytimes.com. There is a wealth of information on there. We devoted sort of an unprecedented amount of space in our newspaper to print this in the February 15th edition. So
great.
With that, I'm happy to take questions, as I'm sure the rest of the speakers are.
Thank you. So let me just ask Crystal to go ahead and queue up the questions. Thank you very much to Stan and to Rui and to Brendan.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Jen DiMaggio with Politico.
Hi, I wanted to follow up, Stan, on your description of the polls and the polls as it relates to the election.
Mm-hmm.
And just go back to, you said
yep.
it doesn't seem that it's going to affect this year's election, where in the past it was a big election issue. And I just wanted to kind of review those numbers and see if you can talk a little bit more in detail about that.
Right. First of all, the issue lacks the urgency, intensity that was evident in in 93, 90, 94. We're asking the question, but it's probably not a top of mind, issue for voters. But the backdrop is, there's a large majority for support. The intensity favors support, favors repeal versus not. But the key question is whether you would, be. And a couple key questions. The other piece of this is where, given the issues that Republicans are likely to try to turn to in this election, since you have 41% of Republicans favoring repeal, this is hard. If you're sitting down as a Republican strategist, this is not where you would go to say, okay, let's tee this one up. In the environment that we're dealing with, I would very quickly put this aside as an issue to make a target or a symbol in this election. In any case, the voters that you would expect to respond, Catholic voters, older white voters, mm-hmm. are very strongly supportive. We do ask a question whether if your member votes to repeal, very explicit. Would this make you more or less likely, to vote for that person? And it's an even split. That was not the case in 94, and the issue was played, in 94. So there's not much incentive. The country would like to see the change, and they'd like to see the change come quickly. There's not much incentive for those who opposed, to try to make this an issue, to give it intensity, or to try to, make a case. Right now, the issue seems to me settled. As much as any issue we face here seems settled for many mainstream and both partisans of both both sides.
Okay. What's the level of urgency to pass it now versus later?
Well, the urgency may well be in the policy. I can't speak to, policy. I think the urgency, is in the Iraq and Afghan war context. People believe the war, for me, it's one of the more surprising findings. Mm-hmm. By two to one and 2-1 on intensity, these wars increase the need to repeal this, to have, have every available, ready person. And as opposed to the other argument, which is at a time of two wars, that you would not want to, threaten, the morale of the military. This is not the right time. To be honest, I expected that to be a closer call when we wrote that question. We didn't ask that question as such earlier, but I would have thought the war situation in the two countries and the demand to have a strong military might have led to some caution, but that's not what it produces. But those wars produce the urgency.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Carrie Ellivelle with The Advocate.
Hi there. I think this is a question for Stan, mm-hmm. But anyone can jump in. So this is sort of a little bit different take on what Jen just asked, mm-hmm. which is because there still seems to be, from what I can tell in my reporting, a hesitancy among members to want to deal with this. There still is some question. So it may be settled in the American public's mind, but I find the resistance to, moving forward with this very quickly, some extent in Congress. And I'm wondering if you can infer anything about whether or not, moderate Democrats who might be tepid on this, who might not necessarily want to move forward, if there's anything to be said about whether or not they could, there could be some sort of negative impact on Democrats and moderate Democrats, as well as, more progressive Democrats, for not actually getting this done in this Congress.
Well, I'm not sure I would make that, argument, given everything else that's happening, from healthcare, to the economy. I don't think that's the issue so much. They do think this is a national security issue. Voters do. Voters, do think the military will be stronger, not weaker, for making this change. We asked that question. The fact that Catholics and older white voters, are even more supportive. Suggests that this is a position that that moderate and conservative Democrats are very supportive of. So I think you can make the argument that this is a good vote for them. It's important to happen. People you know, believe it should happen now because of the wars. You know, I can't. We didn't ask the question in ways that the voters would pay a price, that these members would pay a price for deferring. Given the history of this issue, the bigger argument seemed to be to make you're not going to pay a price for, you know, for advancing this issue. We now, for sure, you know, we show you don't pay a price for advancing the issue. For sure, a large majority, and probably a large majority of more moderate centrist voters, want this change to happen. Think it should happen because of the wars we're involved in.
And Carrie, okay. this is Winnie. Let me just add that. In addition to the context of the polls and the support for repeal by independents and more moderate voters, I think it's important to take a look at recent comments by Colin Powell. And I think that's clearly a significant new piece of information from the debate in 1993 and 1994 with Powell, in fact, endorsing the review effort and moving toward looking at repeal as the right thing to do and the right thing now, followed, this past weekend by former Vice President Cheney also saying that now it's the time to start reviewing the policy and looking toward change. I think all of those policy factors and political factors add to the to what will be an engaging debate on Capitol Hill for sure. But, you know, Congressman Murphy, who is the lead on the House side, has close to 190 co-sponsors for a bill with probably a couple dozen or so more votes of support. Senator Lieberman is looking toward introducing a repeal bill very shortly. With the leadership of President Obama, the Secretary of Defense Gates, and the military establishment with Admiral Mullen, I think the political context and the policy context are changing as well.
Right. Let me just ask one other thing. I would be interested, and you guys may not have an answer for this, but I would be interested if this is not done by the 2012 election. In other words, if Democrats lose so many, if it's not done this Congress, I mean, this is obviously extrapolating out quite a bit, but if Democrats lose a number of seats and aren't able to make this happen in this Congress, and, you know, Republicans don't sort of move forward with it, or at least in a bipartisan fashion, nothing goes forward by 2012, I wonder if this particular issue ranks among something like health care for not getting done. In other words, if the president outlined it as something that he wanted to see happen and it doesn't happen, I wonder what kind of negative impact that has. But anyway, that may not be answerable.
Well, I think the plan that they put in place suggests that they're moving on a far faster timeline than the one that you've just outlined, Carrie. So I think this is a this year issue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Duncan Osborne with Gay City News.
It's a question for Stan Greenberg. How do you, or is there a way to account for respondents in your poll who may not want to disclose their actual position on this issue to the pollster on the telephone? Is there any way to do that? Is there any way to tweak those numbers and get some sense about the impact those people might be having?
Well, you know, if you look at the Military Times survey, they've had a drop from two-thirds to, I think, 52%, with a significant undecided. My guess is the undecided on that question has meaning. I'm not sure what it is, and I haven't done that survey, and I invite that discussion. This issue is a polarizing and emotive issue, given the history that we know. It's the response on this is almost like, what's the fuss about? But I don't think people feel, that there's an approved position on this issue. It may change with what's happened, with the testimony before Congress. But up till now, I don't think people are answering this question under pressure. We have 90% answering, the question. So we're not getting that big a don't know, response to it. And also the intensity. There's no reason for people to follow up and give, a more intense response. Intensity on this issue is on the side of making the change. And I would note on healthcare, the opposite, is the case, that the intensity is on the, in the opposition to. Also, our wording of the question, we try to give permission to people not to, to respond favorably. Federal law currently prohibits openly gay men and women from serving in the military. So we set out federal law and use the word openly, and then ask whether it should be repealed. To repeal a law is that, you know, is a harder thing than simply favor or oppose a position. And so we set this up to make it, you know, hard for people to give it, 55%, 54% in the survey, which is consistent with Quinnipiac, you know, say they favor repeal. So I don't think this is one, you know, there is a perplexing or ambivalent kind of response that we have to unravel. I think people think the military is under great stress. National security issues are challenging. They've watched now for years trying to find the... That's build a strong military, and they get the people to serve, and people think gays and lesbians should serve in the military.
If I can ask and make a comparison here, going back to 93-94, Lawrence Korb, in a conference call with reporters last year from the Center for American Progress, criticized that process because it was slow-walked, as he put it, and there was all sorts of time, months, for opposition to really sort of grow and develop. Does your poll suggest anything to you about the possibility of that happening this time around?
Yeah, Winnie may want to respond to this because I'm not sure this is slow-walked. You know, we've done focus group. Dave Walker, who, by the way, who was the lead with us on this project, is probably on the call. We've done focus groups as well, not just the survey. There's almost a presumption this is going to happen.
Yeah.
That he may want to talk about, which helps define this.
Dave? Well, this is Dave Walker. We did two civilian groups and then four groups among military personnel, officers, enlisted, and all four service branches were represented. The military guys, they thought it was inevitable. I mean, to be honest,
We saw that too. This is Brendan McGarry at Military. The data is sparse simply because we didn't specifically address that question, but anecdotally, we did a number of roundtables with NCOs and officers, and we heard the same thing.
So would you then be asserting that unlike 93-94, there is no simmering pot of anti-gay animus or opposition that can be turned up to a high boil by, you know, 6 months of hearings and items on the television news shows and that sort of thing? In other words,
it's pretty doubtful, this is Rudy Desher, that will happen. I think the environment really was quite a bit different, 17 years ago. I think that it wasn't just that people went out there and lobbied against. Yes, they gave them arguably too long to do that, but actually public opinion was just plain different back then. People were more willing to hear those oppositional arguments and react to them, and I just think we're in a different space now, and public opinion is in a different place, and I think it'll be quite a bit more difficult for the opposition to do that in this case, even assuming they wanted to do it and they could do it.
And it didn't happen on the testimony. I mean, we didn't see that in any large scale, not with the announcement of this, you know, policy and with the hearings. So we haven't seen the evidence that it's in the works, and given the finding and the partisan distribution of these findings.
This is Brendan McGarry of Military Times. I would just note also, from the military perspective, pay careful attention to next week's hearing. You're going to be hearing from the service chiefs, and the Marine Corps Commandant James Conway has publicly said he's against overturning this now. And to a not as strongly worded the Army Chief of Staff, Casey has as well. So Mullen's testimony was clearly a very significant development and incredibly newsworthy, and there certainly could be a lot of sort of filter down effect, I think, but it is worth noting that there have been public comments that are more opposition in nature than what we've heard from Mullen among the service chiefs. So I would just encourage everyone to sort of pay attention and take a look at what exactly some of those folks say next week.
Mm-hmm. Your next question comes from the line of Thomas Day with Macon Telegraph.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I have an Air Force base down here, and I guess my question is for Brendan. Brendan, do you have these numbers from your poll broken down by service and by age?
We sure do, actually. One of the strengths we feel in the data in our sample is that we have quite a few active duty respondents. We've got more than 3,000, and so that allowed us to sort of really take a look at some of these subgroups in detail, and we did see differences among branch of service. In fact, the Marine Corps was most opposed. Our Marine Corps respondents were most opposed at almost two-thirds. They were 64%. Air Force was just under 50%, as was the Navy. They were at 45% in opposition. So you sort of saw this hierarchy, Marine Corps followed by Army, and then being above 50%, and then you saw Navy and Air Force being below 50%. So there did seem to be some differences in opposition and support for in both the branch of service as well as gender. That was a very significant difference. The majority of females, active duty female respondents, it was the only subgroup where we saw a majority favoring overturning the ban. So age to a lesser degree, again, I think primarily because our readers are typically the NCOs and officers. I mean, the junior enlisted folks is where we acknowledge a sort of lack of representative data. So the E-134, that young core, I mean, that really, if you add up all those ranks, I mean, you're talking about almost half the military. The E-134 folks, we simply had a less, not the strongest sample of, and mostly E-4s. And so, you know, at that rank, we're talking about specialist corporals, senior airmen. You're you know, they're on the cusp of getting into the NCO levels. And so the age differences weren't as strong in our survey, but we certainly saw differences in gender, in service, in rank. The junior enlisted folks, the ones we did hear from, the few hundred we did hear from, were more supportive of change. They were less opposed, obviously, but interestingly, they were also more undecided, which doesn't really surprise us. I know, I think it was Stan mentioning that earlier on, the sort of level of undecideds in our survey. That's not terribly surprising. I mean, this is a very hot button issue. This is we believe that there certainly are a lot of folks in the military who are on the fence and who are waiting to sort of see what their commanders say and what comes down from the leadership, which is all the more interesting. What, you know, with Mullen's testimony. So there are differences there, and I'd encourage you. We, you know, there's some graphics sort of laying that out again on our package, so you can look in that in more detail on our website.
Great, thank you. If I could quickly just open the floor to this question, when's this battle really going to happen on the floor, in Congress, after these hearings next week?
Well, I think one of the key indicators will be the defense authorization bill and how Chairman Levin moves that bill through his committee. So that's late March into April. This is a debate with respect to the Hill that will move through the spring and into the summer. As the defense authorization bill moves through, I think Congressman Murphy is working with House leadership now about what the best approach for any repeal effort in the House is going to be, whether that's a freestanding vote or not. There are going to be committee hearings in early March in the Personnel Subcommittee, Congresswoman Davis from California. So this is going to be a debate that's going to play out throughout the spring and summer as defense authorization bill moves on, and concurrent with the review that the Pentagon is now undertaking with under the leadership of Carter Ham and Jay Johnson in the Pentagon. So I think what will be interesting to see is not just sort of the hearings and the service secretaries and sort of how those budget hearings play out, but how the defense authorization bill in both the Senate in particular, how that plays out.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Hugh Lessig with Daily Press Newport.
Thank you. Another question on timing and urgency. If there is that strong voice out there that says this should happen sooner rather than later, do you see this debate possibly getting bogged down or going slower once we move from the view from 10,000 feet to getting into the weeds and talking about how this affects basic housing allowances, other entitlements, unmarried billeting, all those sort of details that have to be worked out? I guess maybe this is a question more for Brendan, but anyone can jump in. I'm just kind of curious what you can infer from some of the data or the anecdotes that you've heard.
Absolutely. Again, we one of the goals of the survey was to sort of figure out some of the practical implications of overturning the ban, and we specifically asked about benefits for gay couples, and our respondents, again, many NCOs and officers were split on this issue. We saw about, it was literally right down the line, I think we saw about 40%. We asked specifically if the policy were overturned, should married homosexual couples receive the same pay, benefits, and entitlements as married heterosexuals? And it was, I think it was yes, 40%, no, 43%, the rest undecided or declined to answer. We did a follow-up to that, to sort of get at to remove the marriage question, because that's obviously a big issue, right? I mean, you could there are many states that simply don't permit that, and there's the issue of as you mentioned, the federal allowances. So when you take marriage out of the question, the level of support does drop a bit. So we saw, at least among our respondents, that when we specifically asked whether married couples should receive it, we saw a break. Split basically even, and then we asked a follow-up to that regarding, you know, do you think unmarried couples who want to be married but can't should receive the same benefits? We did see there were still a majority of that follow-up question among the yes respondents who said yes, but the level of support had dropped. So marriage seemed to be an issue when we asked our respondents about some of those the specific benefits and entitlements.
If I could just share a couple things. I think it's important to note that this year, according to Pentagon data, last year discharges were down, and yet Secretary of Defense Gates in the hearing earlier this month said that after a 45-day review or so, they will take a look at easing the regulations that enforce discharges, with the likely effect being that discharges will continue to drop. All of that, I say, to show that the Pentagon is going to tackle some of these issues that have been raised in the polls that you're raising about benefits and such. But it's important to note, too, that other militaries that have gone through these changes, whether it's the British or the Israeli forces or Australians that have forces that are similar to the United States, all went through these changes. People raised these issues. Answers were given. And the militaries went on to be as strong as they have been in the past. So I think what we need to guard against is that these questions are asked in a legitimate way, in the sense that they're asked in order to get answers. They're not asked in order to seek delay in repeal of the policy.
Thank you.
At this time, there are no further questions in queue.
Great. Well, we want to thank you all for joining the call. Again, you'll find further information on the Military Times website as well as the Center for American Progress. Thank you, Stan and Brendan and Rui.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.